long did you stay with Wed Durlecker before you retired from involvement in the firm's business?
8 years.
And you described yourself during this time as an eminence grise.
Correct.
What did that involve in practice?
Well, I was a sort of consultant, in a way. I was officially, I eventually became a partner again, but I mean, we went to Hong Kong to try and set up a business there, which has now been set up. And I spent about 3 or 4 months in Hong Kong with another chap in the firm, trying to, you know, getting on with the Chinese and the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank and that sort of thing. So I call that sort of eminence grise, but I was an eminence grise in the sense that I had contacts. I mean, I knew more about the differences of opinion between Joe, Charlie, Willie and Henry than anybody else did, because they used to come to me. I think it was partly because in the early days I wasn't a partner, and therefore they thought I might keep my mouth more shut. And therefore I could influence quite a lot of things, and I did attend the board meetings and was treated as an equal. So in that sense, I was an eminence grise.
Did you miss the actual jobbing on the floor of the house?
Sometimes, yes. But basically, no, because I'm showing off a bit, but I knew I was not what I was, and therefore I didn't miss it in a sense, but I missed the bonhomie and the jokes about, you know, the coward, or, and of course, and I missed seeing Mr. Parnes, who's called the animal, you know who I'm referring to,
yes,
of course. That's where the jobbers pick them out. But they can keep that on tape. I was a consultant, and don't forget, still went to Australia about, I mean, I don't know, and Hong Kong. You see, I must have spent 6 years, 6 months of my life in Hong Kong, and about 5 years of my life in Australia, if you add it all up together in the months.
Did you find that because Wed Durlecker was now one of the pillars of the jobbing system, that you were mixing in different kinds of company to that you'd been accustomed to with a much more specialised firm during the 1960s?
Well, yes, one can't help it, you see. I mean, don't forget, I think I'm right in saying in my day, there were about 45 partners. So you're bound to, where you've gone from, say, what have we had, six, I think, in George Hill, speaking off the top of my head, you've got a 45, and furthermore, especially when you're in the office of the consultant and lunch hour, Wed Durlecker had a table in the lunchroom, which I think you could seat 25 people, and they had two sessions for lunch, and sometime one would go in at quarter past 12, and sometime you'd go in at 1:15, and you see a different set of partners. So from that point of view, one saw a lot of the partners, which one had never seen before. And you could hear what they were moaning about. That's the eminence grise comes in to a certain extent. And they didn't shout their odds too much at the lunch table. But another interesting thing was Wilkins did one very good thing. He cut out a lot of the drinking at lunchtime. When I first went to Wed, I was a bit shaken because they really did drink too much at lunchtime. They didn't get drunk, but, you know, they'd have one before lunch in the anteroom, maybe a gin and tonic or a glass of beer, then they'd have wine, maybe red, maybe white, maybe both. That was fine, but I used to wonder when they got to the brandy and the port, and that's what Wilkins cut out, the brandy and the port. There's no doubt about it, that's too much alcohol when you're going to go back onto the floor and try and make money, in my view.
Did they invite people from outside of the firm to social occasions? Did they have contacts
Well, in the big, what I call the big lunchroom, quite often there was the odd body from the Stoics, so it's mostly dealing or dealing partners. But then they had about, I think it was two in the end, partners dining rooms where you'd have six people, eight people. Not necessarily, sometimes you have stockbrokers, sometimes company directors. I mean, I never attended, but I'm pretty sure once a year the governor of the Bank of England came round and had lunch with the senior partner or, you know, Wilkins and one or two others and more senior partners. I've never mixed up in that. But, the usual sort of city lunches, six or eight people in a small room.
Did you ever feel that Wed Durlacher had pressures on them that you as a smaller firm in the 60s hadn't? What I mean is that that they were, because they were so big, expected to deal in size, even when perhaps it mightn't have seemed
correct
in their interests.
Correct, yes. Absolutely right. Hmm. You see, we were in a position where we didn't really have to deal bigger than we wanted to because they couldn't deal elsewhere. And that's where Wed Durlacher got in a position where they thought they could deal elsewhere. But you see, I also, something I should have mentioned earlier when I was talking about the first loss being the best loss, is some of the best deals you do in the stock exchange, and I think outside, are the deals you let somebody else have. Now that is a very important thing. I wrote to my great friend of the National Australian Bank about a month ago with all these debts with Mr. Bond and all that, and I said exactly that. I said, what you banks have got to realize is the best deals are the ones you let some other bank have. And it's so true. And that's what George Hill did and could do. Wed Durlacher hadn't got the guts to do it. And they had to. I mean, one year, Wed Durlacher lost 165,000, give or take 10,000, in distillers. Now, a good jobber, I'm not talking about the bid time, I'm talking about there were tens of thousands of distiller shares changed hands every day. Now, a good jobber cannot lose money if he's dealing in 10 or 20,000, 50,000 a day in distillers. He can't lose money. He might lose money 1 week, but not in a year. And that was the sort of thing they were doing. They were dealing too big and a bad dealer. I'm getting excited.
Well, this probably leads into the final group of questions. And what do you feel it took to be a good jobber? You've referred to a few of the things already.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't say this is the right order of battle, so to speak. You've got to be, in my book, 100% honest. You've got to be able to take losses on the chin, and above all, you've got to realize you are going to make a lot of mistakes and take that on the chin. If you haven't got the guts to make mistakes, then don't be a jobber, because it's cost you money, but it's bad for your ammo or prop. So you've got to write off. And I suppose you've got to have, I suppose, because it's me and I don't know me in a way, you've got to have a quick wit. Not to be witty, but a quick turn of mind. And but you've also got to better read the newspaper quickly. You've got perhaps half an hour to read the Financial Times, maximum, and you've got to go through that Financial Times and ignore everything that's none to do with you, and pick out, you have the knack of picking out the meat quickly. But I think you learn that probably. And of course you've got to have a personality which with which you can get on with people. I don't think my personality in that respect is very good, because I'm inclined to be aggressive, but maybe that's a good sign. I don't really know. That answer your question, or do you want more?
Yes. What do you feel the strengths of the jobbing system were? Or did it have strengths?
Well, I think any stock exchange, I mean, I try not at my age to not behave like an old man, and I try, not very successfully, not to be bigoted, but I am convinced that the best system for stock exchange in the world is the stock jobbing system, where you meet people face to face. You know who is honest and who is dishonest. When you press a lot of buttons, you don't know who the hell you're dealing with, you don't feel any closeness to him, you don't feel you owe him any duty. It's not jobbing anymore, they're all gambling. And the London Stock Exchange has now got no flaw. Now, there is no other stock exchange in the world that I know of that works without a flaw. I'm not suggesting a lot of business goes on the floor, but you go to Singapore, you go to where I've been, you go to Paris, I've been to Switzerland, I've been to Holland, I've been to Hong Kong, all across Australia, I've been to New York, I've been to San Francisco, I've been to Tokyo, and they've all got a floor. As I said before, they've got machines, Christ knows, but they've got a floor. Now, what the hell are we doing without a floor? Because the jobbing system, well, you can have a floor without a jobbing system. You've got to have something to do with it. And I think the general public, I'm now getting on my high horse, are being taken for a ride by Big Bang. I am a member of the Stock Exchange still, after 55 years, and I find it very difficult to deal at a fair price in £5,000 worth of stock. And they're making prices that if I'd made in my day, I'd have been shot. I would have been out of business. I mean, I dealt the other day in a stock which was 30 to 34 pence. They wouldn't make any other price. That's, in the old language, that's 6 shillings to 9 pence. If I had made 6 shillings to 9 pence, I'd have been out of business. I might have made 6 bob to 6, but I doubt I made 6 and a penny 84 pence. Hate me, can I help tuppence farthing, fourpence, hate me, something like that. But not 6 shillings to 9, then I've got to go up 10% before I make anything. I'm getting carried away again, I'm sorry.
Do you feel the jobbing system had any weaknesses?
Well, the answer is it must have, because everything, basically, I mean, I take the view that nothing in life is perfect, therefore the jobbing system certainly wasn't perfect, but I'm not, in a way, I'm not convinced it had any weaknesses in that sense. I think the weakness was, although I deprecate the size of the business they're all throwing around the place now, I think possibly that the jobbing system in the old days didn't have enough people prepared to lose money. It probably lacked a certain amount of capital. But I don't want to be biased, but I don't think it really had any weaknesses as a system. People in it, yes, but the jobbing system I don't think had any weird, because it's an honest reflection of the market. As long as you've got competition and not negotiation, it's common sense. If you're competing, you're gonna give some sort of service, and you're a bloody fool if you don't. But I don't think there were any weakness in it in that sense. Maybe you don't agree with me, but I don't think. I'd like somebody to tell me what the weaknesses are. Of course, people did say the weakness of the jobbing system was that they made big turns and made, but what they don't realize is the losses. You know, they say, oh, jobbers make enormous turns. the end product. And the end product on the turnover was, on the whole, I would think, a very reasonable, well, sometimes very unreasonable, bloody awful. I mean, after all, where Durlach lost 3 million quid 1 year, I mean, it's all very well.
Reviewing your career now, the span of it, from when you first started dealing in the late 30s to when you finally stopped jobbing on the floor of the stock exchange, did the actual technique of jobbing, standing there day after day on the floor of the house, change?
The principles didn't change. I mean, the principles didn't change, but some people changed the principles for the worse, largely by, A, as I already said, going too big and trying to compete too much in case the other chap did something. There was more of that after the war, I think, than there was before the war, but the principle of the job, I mean, I don't think changed at all.
Was there ever any point during your career that you contemplated taking up another profession or...?
Never. I was... My job, I enjoyed it, and I felt... Well, this sounds a bit pompous, perhaps, but I felt I was doing a job which was worth doing and which I thought was good for the public in my little way and good for the stock exchange in my little way. So, I mean, I was very proud, basically, I was very proud of dictum meum pactum. My word is my bond. And that I was very, very proud of that. I still am. And that's gone out the window.
Well, I think that's a good note on which we can finish.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Again.